regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad that you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the state of Minnesota, where the legislative session kicked off this week, and already we have seen several gun control bills introduced. You know, Governor Tim Walz has been demanding a ban on so-called assault weapons for months now. Said he was going to call a special session last year, said it was going to happen no matter what, and then it didn't happen because the votes for his gun ban bill weren't there in the Democrat-controlled state Senate. So has anything changed over the ensuing months? We're going to talk about that momentarily with Brian Strauser from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. But also, just to let you know, again, today is sine die in New Mexico, noon Mountain Time. That's when the legislature has to be completed with their agenda. Right now, it still looks like SB 17 is going to remain bottled up in the House Judiciary Committee, which would be fantastic news. This is the ban on all gas-operated centerfire semi-automatic firearms, as well as a bill requiring all kinds of expensive mandates for FFLs in the state of New Mexico. Good news report as well out of Washington. We are still watching that ban on 3D printed firearms that could also impact 3D printers, CNC machines, and of course regulates, or at least attempts to regulate, computer code as well. That bill is still alive, but a number of other really bad gun control bills, including things like mandatory insurance for gun owners, expanding the number of gun-free zones, those bills apparently dead for the session. So that is that's a big relief for Washington gun owners, because it seems like every year for the past few years, we have seen some pretty major infringements enacted into law. We are still watching what's going on in Colorado, where another similar ban on 3D printed firearms, restrictions on 3D printers as well, passed out of a House committee yesterday, despite hours of testimony in opposition. So we are keeping an eye on that bill. But let's turn our attention now to Minnesota, where again, a gun ban, magazine ban, is at the top of the governor's agenda, at least when it comes to the gun control efforts he wants to see put in place. We did have a chance to talk with Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus Chair Brian Strauser about this on Wednesday afternoon. Take a look and a listen. Brian, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Of course, Cam. Great to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So the legislative session is coming to a close in New Mexico, but it's just kicking off in Minnesota. And the commonality there is that the governors of both states want a gun ban. It looks like Michelle Lujan Grisham's not going to get her wish, but yep. What about Tim Walz? What is he calling for?
Tim Walz wants everything. So our legislative session started yesterday. It's a short session for us because the budget was done last year. The legislature really does not have to do anything at all. The political dynamics here, Tim Walz will sign any gun control bill that passes. In the Senate, we have the DFL has a one majority vote. The DFL is the Democrats, called a little differently here. They have a one seat majority, but we don't believe they have unanimity in their caucus about gun control. The House is tied 67-67, and the Republicans hold the Speaker's gavel under a power sharing agreement they negotiated last year. So the action will be in the Senate. The Senate can, if they have unanimity, can pass and debate whatever they want and throw it over to the House and then yell at the House for not doing anything because nothing is going to happen in the House. But the dynamics are, of course, we can't lose a single vote in the House. We have to keep the pro-gun Republicans together. The Democrats are a lost cause in the House. They're all progressive liberals. They all want gun control. So that's what we're up against in terms of the political dynamic.
Okay. Now, one of the things that's interesting, so, you know, we go back to last fall. We go back actually to, you know, right after the Annunciation shooting, and Governor Tim Walz comes out and says, I want a gun ban, bring people back to the Capitol, no question about it. Well, he doesn't because, as you say, it looked like the votes weren't there. We never even saw specific legislation rolled out, right? We just knew Tim Walz wanted a gun ban.
Yep.
All right. So now the session's begun. Legislation's been pre-filed. Do we know what this proposed gun ban is going to look like?
So there are bills in the House that were pre-filed that came out on Friday.
Okay.
That we were able to see. I'll briefly talk about three bills. The first one, I'll do this in order of progression, progressively bad.
Okay.
The first bill is House File 3351 from Representative Dave Pinto in St. Paul. This repeals our state preemption laws entirely. We have two preemption elements. We have one in our permit law, permit to carry law. We have one that stops local units of government from passing anything. This repeals all of that and allows them to put into place whatever restrictions on whatever they want. So I drive 7 miles between my house and my office here, and I pass through 5 jurisdictions to get here on a 7-mile drive. And sometimes, depending on what side of the street I'm on, I'm in a different city on the same road. So I don't know how you would follow that.
Yeah.
Then we have a straight up magazine ban. And when I mean a ban, I mean it is a total and complete ban on possession of magazines holding more than 10 rounds. There is no grandfathering. It would take effect July 1st, 2026. You can turn them into law enforcement, destroy them, change them so they'll only hold 10 rounds, or move them out of state. That's it. There's no grandfathering. That's every magazine I own.
Yeah.
Or every pistol and rifle that I own. That's House File 3402. Ballsy move here. It's the chief author is Representative Brad Tabke, who won his seat, I believe, by 14 votes.
Wow.
In a Twin Cities suburb. So we'll see what happens there. Oh, I guess there's actually 4 bills, so let me cover that, the other one briefly, too.
Okay.
So House File 3407, again, from our friend Dave Pinto in St. Paul. This is a ban on ghost guns. It is a ban on sale, manufacture, and possession. It limits 3D printing to only people who have a federal firearms license to manufacture. It bans the distribution of 3D printing firearm design files, which I'm not sure how that works. It says you have to go to an FFL to get a serial number, which is not actually a thing. And it bans building more than 3 firearms in a year. So, yeah, House File 3407. And then the big one are House File 3433. And then there is a similar bill, House File 3434. Both are from Representative Emma Greenman, who is the state rep that has the Annunciation School in her House district.
Okay.
These are a complete ban on the sale, transfer, manufacture, and possession of semi-automatic military-style assault weapons, which is a Minnesota term that we already have in law, but she changes it by making it every semi-automatic rifle.
Okay.
So you would have to – you could not purchase them anymore. You could not transfer them. Upon your death, they would have to be turned in, moved out of state, or destroyed. But during your lifetime, if you have it, when the bill takes effect, you can keep it if you get a license from the state. But there's no maximum fee for that. You have to only possess it at your home or a licensed firing range, which is also not a thing in Minnesota. And you have to allow the police to inspect your storage at home without a warrant whenever they want.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
So I assume
thought, I thought Democrats in Minnesota were opposed to law enforcement going into people's homes without a warrant, or was that just ICE?
That was just ICE, I think.
Okay.
I assume that the fee will be $10,000 or something ridiculous every 3 years per gun to do something like this, because none of it's, none of it's defined in the statute.
Yeah.
There's some other restrictions too. I mean, you can't hunt with it, which is fascinating because the top deer rifle in Minnesota is some AR-15 platform that somebody's using. Suppressed, of course. Surprisingly, they're not trying to ban suppressors, but maybe we'll see that tomorrow.
I'm surprised. We had dealt with a $500 tax on the sale of suppressors in Virginia, but thankfully that was pulled off in committee. Do you anticipate – now, these are all House bills, and as you talk about the political dynamics, right, you've got a tie in the House, a Republican leadership. Do you expect the Senate bills to look much different, given that there's a greater chance of passage? Do you think that they'll kind of trim their sails a little bit, or do you think that these will be pretty much what we see in the House?
I mean, I what if I was a betting person in our kind of internal staff discussion this morning, the Senate hasn't introduced any ban bills yet.
Okay.
They have introduced a preemption repeal, but surprisingly with no other authors, just one chief author. That was interesting. And we haven't seen their big, you know, ban on assault weapons or magazines yet. So I guess I'm, you know, we're wondering if there's some internal negotiation going on with the two senators that we, where we don't know where they stand on this. And that's Senator Rob Kupak, which is out in Moorhead, Minnesota, out near the North Dakota line, and Senator Grant Housechild, who is up on the Iron Range, northeast of Duluth there. And they both won, by the way, by just a few hundred votes each. And they're all up for re-election this year.
I was going to ask, this is an election year for this.
Everything's on the table in November. The governor, the attorney general, the House and the Senate. So could have some interesting political dynamics.
Yeah. I appreciate you kind of laying all this out for us. And I mean, honestly, you know, even with the Republicans in the House sort of serving as a backstop, those numbers are so slim. Like I say, you can't afford to lose a single one, right? So I don't think Minnesota gun owners should be complacent or confident at all this year.
No, we need to push and push hard as we continue to work through the session and see, you know, where the chips may lay. I think the Democrats' first priority right now, they have a slew of bills related to immigration and, you know, what has gone on here with Operation Metro Surge. That's their first priority. That's where they're starting with hearings in the Senate and the impacts of that. The House will do the same later this week. And we have a rotating gavel system with committees. So when the Democrats hold the gavel, they can call whatever bills they want on that day. It doesn't mean they're going to pass, but they get their moment, you know, with their bill. So right now their focus is on immigration and kind of recent events here. But we think guns will be next in the Senate. So maybe in the next couple of weeks, we'll see.
Okay. The other, there was one other question I wanted to ask you, and I'm blanking on it right now. So I might have to just have you back on at some point next week talking about this stuff.
You can always do that.
you know, again, Brian, I really appreciate everything that you guys are doing. Oh, that was a question I wanted to ask you. So yeah. We did see this story in the Minnesota Star Tribune. I think it was last week. Number of, you know, concealed carry permits and permit to purchase applications roughly doubled in the Twin Cities area over last year. I assume that a lot of these folks are, you know, non-traditional gun owners, not conservatives. Do you think that's going to have any impact on Twin City area Democratic lawmakers?
I think the only impact will be if there's enough critical mass who are contacting their representatives and senators and telling them that some of these things are a dumb idea.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, certainly there were a number of Democrats, DFL senators and House members and other elected officials that reached out, you know, when Alex Pretty was killed, that called us demanding, you know, that we say something. And, you know, ultimately we issued a statement as more facts became clear. But that's not going to translate to them changing their mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, Representative Sandra Feist, who's an attorney, an immigration attorney, who famously went viral with a video of Greg Pavino arguing with her here, and he brought up the Second Amendment. Like, she's one of the people that called us that morning that Pretty was killed, and she signed on to all of these gun bills. So, you know, don't come at me with that hypocrisy.
Right.
You know, I just don't understand how they square that circle with arguing about Alex Pretty, which was a tragedy. And there's a Second Amendment aspect to that and a First Amendment aspect to that. And then coming back and saying, well, we should ban all of these guns. I mean, she signed on to a bill that would have made Alex Pretty a felon for carrying that firearm because it has a magazine that holds more than 10 rounds. Yeah. But she's going to call us and yell at us about the Second Amendment. Come on.
Right. Yeah. Well, as you say, I don't even think they're trying to attempt to square that circle.
They're not trying to
score political points. But, you know, that again, I mean, not every gun owner is a Second Amendment advocate, unfortunately. If they were, your job would be a heck of a lot easier.
Exactly.
And so I am hopeful, although I don't know how optimistic I am, but I'm hopeful that these new gun owners aren't just going to remain gun owners. they're going to get politically active, that they're going to call the Democrat state senator, they're going to call the DFL representative and say, hey, you know what? I voted for you last time around. I'm a proud liberal. I'm a proud progressive, but I don't want you taking away my ability to protect myself. And if that happens in large enough numbers, then who knows? Maybe we will see some shift, but I think you're right. I don't think it happens. I don't think Democrats reach that conclusion on their own.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
All right, Brian, if folks want more information, if they want to stay up to date on what's going on in the legislature, if they want to become members of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, what's the best way to find you guys?
Go to our website at gunowners.mn. If you want to know what bills are moving, which right now are nothing, gunowners.mn/2026 will get you all the scoop. Links out to our bill tracker, links you out to our action center. Think of that as your home that we keep updated 24/7 on what's going on. But right now, we just started. Bills were just introduced. There's hearings on other things happening right now. And we'll know a few days out or longer about any hearings related to Second Amendment stuff.
All right. Brian Strasser, thank you as always for being a part of the program.
Of course.
And thanks for talking again soon.
All right. Thanks, Cam.
My thanks to Brian for joining us on the program. You know, again, talking about this, you know, narrow majority in the state Senate, divided control in the state House, and this power sharing agreement where you've got a Republican Speaker of the House, but the committees themselves are sort of alternating between Republican and Democrat chairs on a weekly basis. Rob Doerr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus talked about something that happened yesterday. This would have been right around the time that we were talking with Brian Strasser in the Public Safety Committee. Representative Walter Hudson, a Republican, brought forward a bill that would increase penalties for repeat violent offenders using firearms. This is basically a three strikes and you're out approach. Democrats, though, tried to delete the entirety of Representative Hudson's bill and replace it with language banning so-called assault weapons. Now, as the Minnesota Governor's Caucus pointed out, the chair, Representative Paul Novotny, shut down that maneuver. Novotny's a Republican, and this week it was a Republican chair for the Public Safety Committee. Next Tuesday, though, it's going to be a Democrat running the Public Safety Committee, Representative Kelly Mahler. So the Gun Owners Caucus says, based on today's attempted sneak attack, and again, this happened yesterday afternoon, expect a ban on so-called assault weapons, magazine capacity limits, ban on 3D printed firearms, criminalizing gun code, mandatory storage mandates. The caucus said they tested the waters today, and next week they may bring the full package. Representative Walter Hudson said that report is accurate. Said we presented a bill to provide meaningful punishment to serial offenders who use guns in the commission of a crime. And the Democrat response was effectively, no, we're not interested in that. We want to disarm everybody else. So please, if you're a Minnesota gun owner, again, don't think that this divided legislature is necessarily going to save you. Democrats, I mean, think about what we've seen and just talked about this week. In the Virgin Islands, the games that are being played to silence gun owners, right? Canceling meetings 5 minutes before they're supposed to begin. I've got a story at Bearing Arms today about a Democrat lawmaker in Oregon who's facing an ethics complaint for allegedly bullying one of his Democratic colleagues into switching her vote on a gun bill. She had originally voted no. He hauled her out into the hallway, apparently yelled at her for 20 minutes. She's close to in tears, according to some eyewitnesses. They go back into the committee hearing, and then they redo the vote, and she's acting a little confused. Like, I don't know, and she finally falls in line and swaps her vote out from no to yes. They're willing to do anything that they need to do in order to advance their anti-gun agenda. So if that is taking a bill that, again, deals with violent criminals, negating all that language and replacing it with a gun ban bill, criminalizing lawful gun owners, yeah, they'll absolutely do that in Minnesota. So, Minnesota gun owners, keep up your guard. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report from California. Shattered forever, the headline. Family distraught over 8-year plea deal to a individual who, well known to law enforcement, 14-time felon, 10 separate stints in state prison. But Claude L. Moore still got a plea deal in a case where he was originally charged with murder and was able to plead down to manslaughter with, again, an 8-year sentence. And by the time he, well, given the amount of time that he served awaiting trial, the Berkeley Scanner reports Claudel Moore is going to be free in about 3 years. Berkeley Scanner says the case had substantial circumstantial evidence, but no smoking gun. It was March 4th, 2022. Claudel Moore knocks on the door of 47-year-old Josh Fisher, looking for Fisher, according to court records. There were some indications that Fisher owed Moore a small amount of cash. Fisher wasn't home, so Claudel Moore, who's 62, left with a woman that he had come with. Short time later, gunshot is heard there on the street. Neighbors say they rushed to their windows. They saw a man and a woman get into a vintage Cadillac and flee the area. At least one person said the man had been holding a gun. Fisher's there on the ground, bleeding from a head wound. His younger brother gave him CPR until police arrived. But Anthony Joshua Fisher III was pronounced dead 4 days later. Police never did find the murder weapon, but they did find an empty holster and a bag of ammunition when they arrested Claudel Moore and his female associate the same day that Fisher died. They were holed up at a hotel. The woman was never charged. Police noted in the court papers, though, that she showed, quote, no concern that Fisher had been shot, changed her story multiple times during the police interview. At this point, they say they don't know where she is. Not that she would have been much help to testify for the prosecution in this case. They did find Moore's Cadillac hidden under a tarp in Richmond, California. But the scanner says there were gaps in the case. There was no bullet that was found at the scene, which limited ballistic evidence, which is odd, given that Fisher was shot in the head. Surveillance cameras captured Fisher walking south down the street just before the shooting, but there's no footage of the killing itself. And a potentially incriminating statement made by Moore got tossed on a complaint by his defense attorneys that the statement was made in violation of his Miranda rights. And witnesses who initially agreed to testify pulled out of the case and refused to do so as the case went closer to trial. So, you know, in these cases, I mean, again, there's, you know, prosecutors are always going to offer justification for a plea deal. We did the best that we could to ensure that there was some sort of justice given to the family, right? And in this case, maybe there were enough problems with the case, given that witnesses were pulling out, given that there was no, apparently, ballistic evidence, there was no footage tying Claudel Moore directly to the shooting. You know, if the witnesses had pulled out, but you had surveillance video showing Moore pulling the trigger, that's one thing, right? If you don't have that video, and now you also don't have witnesses saying, yeah, I saw this guy with a gun in his hand get into a Cadillac because somebody with their, you know, bleeding from their head is lying on the ground, that can throw a monkey wrench in a prosecutor's case. At the same time, though, this is just one crime and a very lengthy criminal history for Claudel Moore. According to court papers, at the time of the shooting, he was already on probation from a case out of Monterey, California. He was first committed to the California Youth Authority at the age of 16 for petty theft. Probation officer wrote that was the beginning of a long criminal history, which includes convictions for robbery, escape from prison, battery, burglary. The probation officer wrote in this report he's faced numerous extended jail sentences, probation opportunities, prison sentences, and periods of parole and post-release community supervision, yet he continues to reoffend. The nature and severity of his current offense raise significant concerns about his ability to live lawfully and to avoid victimizing others in the future. But despite that, the probation officer ultimately said he supported the plea deal, writing that, quote, it is hoped that this sentence will deter the defendant from engaging in further criminal behavior. Well, we'll see, I guess, in 3 years when Claudel Moore gets out of prison, if it's not before then. Given his lengthy criminal history, I have to say I am not particularly confident of that, although he'll be, what, 65 when he gets out of prison this time around? Typically, statistically speaking, the amount of violent crimes that are committed by individuals 65 and older, pretty small. But it's not unheard of, And if you're dealing with somebody who's basically his entire adult life is, you know, wrapped up in the revolving door of justice, then I don't think anybody should be shocked if Claude Elmore appears in court or in cuffs after he's released from prison 3 years from now. On to today's armed citizen story from Corpus Christi, Texas. Don't have a lot of information about this one. No charges filed in fatal Secretariat shooting. We're not talking about the racehorse, by the way. We're talking about a shooting near the intersection of Secretariat Drive and Martin Street in Corpus Christi. This was earlier this week. Police Department investigating that shooting. Corpus Christi Police Department Public Information Officer Madeline Commons told Channel 3 News that the male victim of the shooting passed away at a local hospital, saying that the shooting occurred as a result of a, quote, business dealing. Commons said it was determined that a disturbance occurred over services rendered and a weapon was produced. Police were able to get to the scene pretty quickly. They detained several individuals, including the individual who pulled the trigger, took everybody down to the police station to conduct interviews. But the latest update from the Corpus Christi police is that the individuals who were detained have since been released and no arrests have been made. So that would indicate again that whatever took place, the shots were fired in self-defense. Now, all this information will be presented to a grand jury there in Corpus Christi. So we'll keep our eyes out for any more information. But at this point, again, despite the lack of details, it does look like this was like police are considering this anyway, a justified use of force. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Chicago who helped save a baby girl in a stroller who ended up in Lake Michigan. They call Chicago the Windy City, and a gust of wind apparently took that stroller, ripped it out of mom's hands, or maybe mom didn't have her hands on the stroller. But anyway, stroller and the little girl ended up in Belmont Harbor on Chicago's north side. Chicago police said the stroller fell in the water about 3 o'clock Wednesday afternoon. Multiple witnesses on the scene quickly reacted. Apparently, there were multiple good Samaritans. One individual, Leo Cundiff, though, says he doesn't know how to swim, but he knew he only had seconds to act when that stroller blew away from the mom and into the lake. Cundiff said her kid could have been gone. So he ended up getting into the water. He said, I could tell that the mom was too panicked to do anything. So I was like, I guess I'm jumping in. He said, I wasn't going to let that baby die. That's crazy. Cundiff was taken into the hospital, after rescuing that little girl. As you can imagine, Lake Michigan, pretty cold in mid-February. Cundiff said, I'm just glad the stroller was up and not face down. The baby dipped under a couple of times, but I was able to keep her up and she was breathing and crying when we got her out. Then other good Samaritans were able to help Cundiff get out and onto dry land. The little girl taken to the hospital for observation, initially listed in good condition. Cundiff was in the hospital for heart monitoring, hopes to be out today after an overnight stay and in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a little child in need. Leo Cundiff there in Chicago, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And given all the crummy stories we have out of Chicago, I just read a story about another violent crime on a Chicago CTA train, gun-free zone, didn't stop robbers from assaulting an elderly individual with a walker. So yeah, given the amount of crummy stories that we see from Chicago, I'm glad that we could really report on a good Samaritan like Leo Cundiff. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I do want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. It means a lot to me. This will be the last show until Monday, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com today, Friday, throughout the weekend. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation, and it is a very busy time in state capitals across the country right now. But I got to tell you, I'm keeping my fingers crossed we get a decision out of the Third Circuit today on New Jersey's ban on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines, because the Supreme Court going to be considering a number of hardware ban cases in conference tomorrow. And it'd be great to have a circuit court split, even at the last minute. So I'm not expecting that to happen, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Anyway, legislation, litigation, regulation, culture war issues, we got it all covered at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT and get 60% off your membership, and you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I thank you for that support again. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.